This is the Southern Illinois Insider, heard every Sunday morning on WMIX.
Good morning, Southern Illinois, and welcome back to the Southern Illinois Insider here on WMIX, AM 940, 94.1, 96.5 FM, and also online at WMIX94.com. I'm your host, Jake Linder. I'm joined in studio by some folks from the SSM Health Hospice Care branch, and we are talking with branch manager Chris and staff RN Brittany. Good morning to you both. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Glad to have you all in here to talk a little bit about hospice. And there's quite a bit of a stigma, you know, surrounding hospice. And you guys are here to maybe not so much debunk that, but just talk about how there's more to it than what people think a lot of times. But if you don't mind, I'd like to get a little history from you two, kind of on your, you know, career path and what led you to hospice itself, you know, and in the medical field. Chris, we'll start with you. Did you always want to be in healthcare, and was it always hospice, or did you kind of get, you kind of went that direction and now you're in a position? Was, I mean, where did you start, and where, how did you end up where you are now?
Well, I've always wanted to be a nurse. My grandmother was a nurse, so I always wanted to be a nurse. And so I graduated nursing school in 80. I was an LPN in 86, and in the RN program, I worked at Good Sam Hospital. And then I decided after my third child, I was going to home care, which was going to be a better fit for me and my family life. I did home care, but I filled in for hospice at that time, and I really liked it. And I've done hospice for the last probably 25 years. I have been the branch manager for about 9 years now, and it's just, I just found that was my niche that I really, really loved.
So maybe it wasn't the end goal from the beginning, but you just kind of found yourself gravitated towards that.
Correct.
That's very cool. It's cool how you start out as, you know, maybe a nurse, but then you just, you kind of, you get pulled in one direction, whether it's pediatrics or like you, you know, with hospice and stuff. It's kind of cool how your direction can change.
And it takes a special person to do these specialty areas.
Yeah.
Because like you mentioned pediatrics, I wouldn't mind being a pediatric nurse, but it's really hard because you're not only dealing with a sick child, but you have very worried parents.
Yes.
With you.
Right.
And sometimes the parents are harder to handle than handling just a child. It's just not the patient. And, you know, and I'm at a, we're at a very vulnerable time of people's lives. And to me, that is very rewarding, getting them to be able to do what they want at the end of their life. You know, most people do not want to die in a hospital. They just want to be at home, and we can make that happen.
Yeah, you're almost at the flip side from pediatrics. Yep. You've got worried and, you know, very upset kids sometimes that are worried about their parents, or if there's no kids involved, you're just an adult or somebody that's just worried, just flat out worried and dealing with something. So that's good stuff there. And Brittany, for you, kind of same question. Did you just get into being a nurse, and did you gravitate towards hospice, or is this kind of where you are and you're still working on where you want to be eventually?
No, I never saw myself in hospice. I had actually, growing up, I knew I wanted to do something in like the medical or scientific field. I was really good in science and math. Started kind of gravitating more towards medical field. My mom worked at Good Sam before I had, and was doing billing and admitting. And she basically said, hey, there's like a volunteer program that you can do. So I was in high school, and during the summers I would do that. I worked in several different places, and one of them was in home health. I helped Sally Waters with some of her stuff. And she kind of taught me, like, with palliative care, home health, and hospice, like, what all each one represents and what they do. So I had, a better understanding of it. And then I also shadowed her when it came to my nursing, when I went into nursing, and then brought that kind of to the floor that I worked on. So I did work on the surgical medical floor for a good while as an aide and then as a nurse, and did pediatrics on that floor too when they had it. And then some life things happened and I needed to change change roles and try to find something that worked better, like away from the pandemic and away from other things, and have more of a home life. And when looking around, I was trying to find something for the weekends, and for some magical reason, like St. Louis had one open for SSM Health, and I was like, well, I'm over here a lot, maybe I can do that. But then when I searched a little more, I realized we had one here in Mount Vernon for weekends, and I'm like, that is not heard of. Like, home health and hospice has never had weekends. Like, that's kind of new and different. So I went ahead and applied, and I got hired. But yeah, I totally expected to be like, I really wanted to do OB, and now I'm on this opposite side. So yeah, things can always change, but I wouldn't change it for anything else.
You think you'll stay in hospice?
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. Very cool stuff. I like to hear, you know, your guys' stories and, you know, how you got to where you were, especially in the medical field, with all the different directions that you can take. And we're kind of focusing on hospice care and what it is, and also kind of a stigma around it a little bit. And Chris, I mean, essentially, without sugarcoating it much, people think as soon as you hear he's on hospice care or she's on hospice care, they're just going to die. And that's the end of it. And it's just they're biding their time. And although that can be true, right? I mean, there is other things that can happen, too. I mean, people have lived and graduated through hospice care. But why exactly do you think there's that stigma? I mean, I know, obviously, part of it is because a lot of times that is what happens. You know, you're making them comfortable for the final days. But because there is cases of people, you know, living and graduating through hospice care, why do you think it's always just the one side and not maybe both?
Because I believe people don't realize what we actually do. They have the stigma that hospice, you know, is for a dying person. Well, it is. The Medicare guidelines are usually 6 months or less, but a lot of times if we are at a point when hospice started, it was meant a lot for cancer patients, and that happened more quickly. I mean, we see all kinds of different diagnoses now, from cancer to COPD to heart and things like that. And so when the patient, our family, you know, the patient's saying, I really don't want to do this anymore, that's when you need to start thinking about hospice, because especially if you're having a lot of trips to the hospital and they're getting tired and the patient just wants to be able to be kept comfortable. We can make things happen in the home that people are like, I didn't know you could do this. We have a lot of other services besides the RNs. We have the CNAs to help with the bathing. We have social workers to help with any other, you know, concerns like getting homemakers and things like that. We have our own medical director. We have a chaplain. We have several chaplains, I will say. We have a music therapist. We have pet therapy. One of the big things that they don't hear about is volunteers, because, I mean, when you have somebody on hospice, then you have a caregiver that needs a break. Well, we can have volunteers sit with the patients while the caregiver runs to their doctor appointments, there, runs to the grocery store and things like that. It's just trying to get people to think, oh, we don't want to, yeah, hospice is when you're going to die, but that can take anywhere from, you know, 2 hours to, you know, 2 years. I mean, we've had people on the program. I had, you know, one little lady, she was on for almost 5 years. As long as you're meeting the Medicare guidelines, we can, you know, keep you on.
Yeah. And it's just, it's a tough thing, you know, for people to understand or to know about, because, you know, I think, and maybe Brittany, maybe you can kind of shed some light on this, but I think most people, they don't view hospice as any kind of an option until it's almost a last resort. Now, is that just normal? Is that just what happens? Or is it something that they could maybe utilize a little bit sooner?
It's definitely something that they can utilize sooner. I think what usually happens, and we've discussed this multiple times, is that most patients will be with their doctor or at the hospital trying to go more for that curative aspect, which is great. We want that for them. But they don't realize that they also have the choice that, you know, they could have extra pain relief on our end that can't be really done in the hospice or in the hospital or home setting. A lot of, you know, there's a lot of pain control management around, and a lot of
regs that go with that.
Yeah, regulations, like the narcotics and things. So when they come onto our program, we can actually control their pain, and actually that sometimes can help with eating better. And then once they're eating better, then they're getting more strength because they get, you know, more built up protein and getting muscle mass back and getting up and moving around. And that's actually how they graduate off of our program, is they start gaining weight, they start being able to do more things, and then we're like, you know what, you're doing so well, like, you know, you can actually graduate and be off. But most of the time, yeah, doctors don't realize that patients qualify for hospice. They basically call us in too late, to where they are at the very last end stages. And then when we take care of the families do say, wow, you know, like, I needed this help long ago, and I didn't realize that we could have had it a lot sooner.
So is it always up to the doctor, or as a caregiver, or even someone who's, you know, maybe kind of dealing with it on your own? Like, you're going to the doctor and you're getting tested and you're feeling like something's not right, and maybe they haven't even brought up hospice yet. Is that something as an individual or a caregiver for that individual they can suggest or look into on their own?
That is correct. It is, that's patient advocacy. And that is something that, I mean, we have families that will call our office and we'll talk to, we do have to have a doctor's order to do hospice, but they can call and make the suggestion, and, you know, the doctor can write the order. And that does happen, because a lot of times, you know, the doctors are not thinking always, well, she's had, you know, 3 admissions this year. We're not really changing any meds. We just, you know, she comes in, we give her, you know, say it's for a heart patient, we give some, you know, diuretics to take the fluid off, send her back home. Them are things that we can manage and watch in the home and take care of.
Brittany, do you think that sometimes doctors themselves, you know, would admit that they even fall victim to the stigma of hospice?
Yes.
They try to do everything they can on their end, and they just don't think about potentially maybe, because there's still care afterwards, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
definitely.
It's not like that doctor has to stop trying things,
right,
for the most part, you know?
It wouldn't be so much trying new things. Granted, we have had patients that have been on hospice, and then we say, you know, there's these things that might actually help in your comfort needs, and they have to come off of our program in order to have those, but then they come back, like the Plurex for those that have, like, pleurisy, just draining fluid off the lungs. That can be a procedure that they can come off of, go get the procedure done, come back to us, and then we manage it and show the family how to. But, a lot of physicians have that stigma as well, just thinking more of, like, how can I get them to last longer? And we're more focused on, you know, keeping them as is. And if they do decline, then we take those considerations and symptoms and treat those. We're not more of a curative aspect, but more of a palliative. So
what's, I mean, it's weird to say, because a lot of times whenever you're talking about healthcare and, you know, orthopedics or this or bariatric or whatever, you talk about an ideal patient or an ideal candidate for, you know, a lap band surgery or something like that. It's weird to say that for hospice, but I guess that's the only way I know how to put it. What is an ideal candidate, or what are the signs that maybe hospice could be an option for someone before the doctor has even suggested it to, say, their kids or whatever, whoever their caregiver is?
That's a loaded question, Jake.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like,
if you go with a cancer diagnosis, it's real easy.
Sure.
Because if they stop doing radiation or chemo, they don't want any more treatment. That's perfect time. Perfect time. Now, when you get into one of our bigger diagnoses, this heart and lungs, that gets a little bit grayer, because you know, they may fill up with fluid, you get the fluid off and they feel better. But it's these frequent hospitalizations. If we're not, you know, and all of a sudden you say you have somebody with a, you know, bad lung disease, I don't want to be put on a ventilator. I don't want life support. That's the time to start talking to them when you are noticing, you know, frequent admissions to the hospital because of the shortness of breath. And that can happen in the lung or heart disease, either one. But if the, you know, patient starts saying, I'm really tired, then it's time to start thinking, well, let's not think about, you know, the quantity. Let's think about the quality. Because, I mean, we have people that, you know, if they can't breathe, they can't do anything. And if we can, you know, if they want the quality to be with their family and things like that, then it's time to start, you know, thinking about that.
Well, and I guess the other side to that, or another deciding factor for some people, would be insurance, right? I mean, if the insurance decides that maybe not, you know, maybe not they're going to cover it, then that could be an unfortunate thing that,
It's an unfortunate thing, and that fortunately, when you're dealing with hospice, at least most of it is Medicare age. And it is covered by Medicare at, you know, at 100%, I will say. But the insurance, if we get somebody, you know, that is younger, and of course, I used to think 60 was older, and now that I'm there, you know, it's, but if they are on an employee's insurance, then sometimes that is a problem.
Anything else in particular? I kind of have a final question for both of you. I want you both to answer. But anything else in particular maybe that we haven't covered or I haven't asked about that you want to make sure to get that information out to our listeners about hospice care? And
I kind of want to break down like the palliative hospice and home health.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because you said that word and I was sitting over here as you were talking. I'm like, what is palliative? So maybe explain that too if you don't mind and go from there.
So when it comes down to it, so you have those chronic diseases like COPD or CHF. Those are ones that can typically be diagnoses that can come to us, even like strokes and things like that. Well, most of the time what happens when they're in the hospital and they are referred out to home health. Home health basically comes to them because they're stuck at home. They're not able to travel and go to the physician. So they show the caregivers and the patient how to take care of themselves while they're at home, get that strength back, and then usually come off of home health. As for us, there's palliative in the hospital, but there's not so much out like when you're at home. So basically home health, you have to be homebound. With hospice, you can actually get out, do activities that you want to do, as long as you're able. And we always joke, you know, as long as it's safe, you can go parachuting if you'd like, as long as you got a parachute. So, you know, we've actually sent people on trips, like to, Green Bay Packers and, we sent one family to the, I know it's local, but we sent them to the St. Louis Zoo as a family, like a whole family trip, so that they could spend time with their grandkids and children. So there's things that we help support with that too. Like we'll actually send medication and oxygen and things with them to like help them go have those experiences. But as for the palliative part, I always tell our patients when we're admitting them, like, we're more of a palliative until that final time does come when we are noticing that approaching of, you know, of them passing is coming. We're more of palliative. So we take care of, like, all their medications. We take care of all their wounds supplies, their incontinence supplies, things like that. Basically things that a doctor would be doing for them, but we come to them instead of them having to come to the office or the hospital. There was one other thing I had thought of and then it just kind of left.
And the palliative part is, it's a bridge between home care and hospice. And the palliative, we're trying to start them conversations, but the patient is still able to go back and seek the more aggressive treatment than what they get with when they're on hospice, because we're not treating the disease, we treat the symptoms, and we do very good at, for the most part, of keeping symptoms under control.
Yeah. We have Brittany and Chris here with SSM Health Hospice Care, and they're just kind of walking us through what hospice is and the fact that there is a the stigma on it that you're only on hospice if you're about to die. And while that can be true, there are other, you know, things that we have covered here in our chat. My last kind of question for you both would be, if someone was standing in front of you and you were talking to them about hospice and they were basically saying, well, we're not going to, you know, either we're not going to do that or we don't want to do that until it's too late or we don't believe in that sort of thing. You know, all you ever do on hospice is you take them in so that they can go off and die. What would each of you, you know, say to that person to try to convince them that maybe they're incorrect and there's other things that you got? I mean, you've done it already, but if you're talking directly to someone, what would you say to them if they had that to say to you?
I try not to get really upset. But I have had that conversation in Walmart one time, actually. I would say you need to investigate as to what hospice really does. I can tell you what hospice does because I worked it. I said, we do not come in and take your house, home, car, and everything. We do not stop meds. Our goal is to make your life as comfortable as it can be in what time you have left. And we can make that happen in your setting, whether it be your home, your family member's home, a nursing home, we can make that happen. We don't come in and take everything away from you. And that is not our goal. We want you to have the best quality of life that you can have with the time you have left.
Brittany?
Yeah, and when you say with the time you have left, again, that can be like hours. Like, it just depends on their diagnosis and when they get to us, to like a cancer diagnosis that they could be on for a good while, just different things. But with that, just...
And it could be extended, the time they have left, like, because they go on hospice too.
And that's true, yeah. And I was thinking of that earlier, that... statistically, and it's a statistic that you can actually have, what is it, up to 3 weeks, I think, extra to your life versus being at a hospital and doing all of those treatments. You can actually have more time being on hospice, and a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, well, this is good stuff. I think if anybody's on the fence, they'll at least hear you out now. You know what I mean? And if they were on the total other side of the fence, they might still hear you out, but we can only do so much, and we have a short time to do so. Chris, Brittany, we appreciate you both coming in. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Find full archived interviews via the WMIX podcast on our website, WMIX94.com.